Welcome to another episode of the Celebrant Talk Show. My name is Josh Withers, I'm your host today, and I've got a really exciting episode as part of our series talking to new celebrants, celebrants that have graduated from the Certificate 4 in Celebrancy with the Celebrant Institute, and today's is another ripper. If you want to listen to more episodes, celebrant.fm is the website to go to find links to subscribe to your podcast app, and of course also to listen to the episodes just on the web. And if you're interested in the Cert 4, if you're interested in studying to become a celebrant, plus also if you actually are a celebrant today and you like more help and guidance and mentoring in your business, then we have a membership program for you at celebrant.institute.
My name is Tori Brown. I own Grace and Soul Celebrancy, based on, of course, the study that I did with the Celebrant Institute. I am located at the moment in the Northern Gold Coast, which is obviously a very beautiful part of Australia. When I became a celebrant, I'm only a very new celebrant. I'm a little baby celebrant. I completed my study in May 2022. I finally got registered 11 weeks and 5 days from submission of my documents. And that was in August last year, in 2022. And so now I have been a celebrant for around 8 to 9 months. So yeah, very much in the baby stages, very much still in the realm of figuring out business, understanding what this celebrant life looks like. And yes, thinking about the future and what that might look like for me.
When I went to school, there was absolutely zero little kids who wanted to be a celebrant. Everyone, I think the hot topics were pilot, a lot of firefighters. There were a couple of service people, kind of army, whatnot. A couple of mechanics. We're talking grade 4, grade 5 here. Zero celebrants. So it's not really one of those careers that someone's dreamt about being from, when I was a little kid. So why? Why did you become a celebrant? What's your genesis story?
I suppose my genesis story is probably two-pronged, and this is going to get pretty deep pretty quickly, so I apologise. when I was 16, I was in a car accident, which also took the life of my younger sister, who was 13 at the time. That was obviously a very life-defining time in my life. But it also gave me an incredible key to understand that life is so incredibly precious and very short, and it can be taken away from you in the blink of an eye. I suppose from that respect, I then had at a very young age an insight into life that most people don't get until they're a little bit older. And so from then on, I made a pact to myself, if not with her, then for her. And so it's pretty much been go from there. So I finished school, went to university, I bought a house, I've moved up here, and everything that I do, I'm just full speed ahead. I'm sure you can ask all of my friends and they'll say the same thing. The actual reason why I became a celebrant is that I was asked a significant amount of times to be MC for my friends' weddings. And truth be told, I absolutely hate public speaking. It makes me paralyzingly nervous. I don't even know if that's a word, but it feels like it is. It makes me so incredibly nervous. I get dry in the mouth. I get this red rash all over my chest that then develops up my neck and over my face. And so, to be honest, like I absolutely, of course, I couldn't say no. I felt like I couldn't say no to my friends. And I do have an aura, I would say, when I walk into a room that everyone gravitates towards me. So I do have the personality for it, but my public speaking was just not up to scratch. And I felt that. I felt it in every part of my being. And I'm also what I would probably class as a perfectionist. So I wanted to make sure I did a good job. Ultimately, the only thing that really could make me do better is to put myself in the firing line and continue to practice public speaking. So I was looking at Toastmaster classes or other ways that I could do it. I started to put my hand up at my full-time job to do workshops and stuff to really put myself in the cauldron of fire. And then I was attending a friend's wedding. And to be honest, I was sitting there and the celebrant was, I would say the standard of the celebrant was very low, very, very low. And I thought to myself, surely I could do this. Surely this could be something that I could do. Number one, fix my fear of public speaking. Well, not fix it, but help me expose myself more to this. And number two, it's you obviously capture people in the most incredible time in their life. They're so excited. They're excited for the future. They're in a big old love bubble. Their families are so excited. And for me, that's really what the essence of all that is. And I suppose that links back to the original part of the story, which if I'm not sure if you've been in this situation, but when you lose someone that's very close to you, you realize the I suppose you realize how important creating memories with those closest to you is. And for me to be a part of creating a seamless memory for someone on their special day, surrounded by their family and all their closest friends, that's the greatest gift that I can ever give anyone. And yeah, if that's my piece of what I do for the world, is to create a little bit of sunshine and allow people to have beautiful memories with their nearest and dearest, then that's all I could ever hope for.
Yeah, I do understand that. I haven't lost someone to the same circumstance that you have, and I'm deeply sorry for your loss. But it's also definitely worth noting, as you have, that I feel like any situation in life, whether it's just something really mediocre like being handed a coffee, or something much deeper and more important, that there's always two ways you can kind of rebound from that. And I look at my own childhood and my brother, and we've both kind of rebounded separately, you know. Like when you throw a tennis ball to the ground, it's not guaranteed to go left or right every time. And so that's a phenomenal path that you've taken. And what a Genesis story, because I feel like you talk to most celebrants. I don't know if you've talked to many, but most of us saw a wedding and thought one or two things. That was terrible, I can do way better. Or that was awesome, I can do that. Which are both valid and awesome ways of becoming a celebrant. But for yours to be emboldened with something much more, I was going to say important, but I don't want to take away from other people's stories, but just, you know, something much more valuable was really beautiful. So congratulations, good on you. The question I've got now, though, is a little bit more practical.
Thank you.
There's a difference between wanting something and getting it. You know, all of us can drive past a Maserati and think that'd be cool.
Ditto.
But to have your own is a completely different task. So like, what do you do? Do you ask Siri, how do I become a celebrant? Like, what are those steps you took to become? Well, obviously you studied with the Celebrant Institute and then applied. But yeah, how did you figure out what to do?
Yeah, so then I obviously came back from that wedding and I started to look into it because, to be honest, I wasn't entirely sure. I'd never really thought about who a celebrant is, what they do. And a lot of growing up, I had spent a lot of time in at church weddings. So I wasn't really sure what that would entail. So I obviously went to Dr. Google, did a fair bit of Google searching, but I'm also I'm one of those people that reads through a lot of reviews, and anything that I do is very calculated. So I obviously started looking into what it is to be a celebrant, started looking on Instagram, wanting to stalk a few of these like younger, vibrant and fresh celebrants that I was sort of aspiring to be. And then I sort of slid into their DMs and said, hey, how did you become a celebrant? I'd obviously had a quick Google and found out there were quite a few offerings, but it's all a bit wishy-washy. Like, how do you know what the best one is? So I thought I'll go to the horse's mouth, contacted quite a few of those celebrants, and then they got back to me. A few of them had said, I studied with this place, but I would definitely recommend the Celebrant Institute. And so from there, pretty much it was mainly word of mouth, but also Google reviews and stuff like that. When I found myself down the rabbit hole, that's sort of how I figured out exactly how I could become a celebrant. So I reached out to Sarah And I suppose the rest is history.
The rest is history. That's beautiful. Yeah, and look, much love to all those other celebrants. We we call it word of mouth. What it really was, I entered the house, held a gun to the head, so come on, mate. If someone asks you, no.
Whatever works, Josh.
that's cool. I love it. The Cert 4 isn't what a lot of people think it is, because I suppose when people think about becoming a celebrant or an officiant for the Americans, they think about Joey from Friends or just, you know, or the numerous people in pop culture that have just applied for a license online. What was your expectation of the Cert 4 versus actually doing it?
Yeah, so I had the meeting with Sarah, and she was pretty frank about this is going to be hard work, especially because I was working full-time as well, and I do have a pretty hectic full-time job that does require me to be traveling a fair bit. But I was like, I'll be able to do this. I had a look at the options it was obviously fairly flexible, the timelines and stuff, and I thought, no, if I knuckle down, I want this pretty bad. I'm really starting to get in the mindset of wanting to get a little side hustle and really looking for, I suppose you could say, my passion project. I sort of went in thinking, yeah, this will, of course, it's going to be hard with a full-time job, but I'll be sweet. Because I also, of course, I've done an undergraduate degree. And at the time I was working, doing internships and a lot of other stuff. So I was like, nah, if I can do that easy. Well, that's not so much the truth. The one thing that I really struggled with, which I knew was going to be an issue from the very beginning, was the flexibility. Of course, that is amazing. It's very much a positive. But for people like me, it's also a con, because it means that I don't have a deadline that I need to work to. I would say I was pretty willy-nilly with those fake deadlines that I gave myself. Sarah does have some deadlines in a timeline that you get given, but if no one's tapping on my shoulder, then that's my problem. Basically, I would say, and I'm not sure if I'm allowed to swear, but the Cert 4 kicked my ass, and I was not ready for that. But long story short, I am so grateful for the amount of work that was required in the lead up to completing the Cert 4, because I believe it has prepped me appropriately for a much more streamlined experience now that I do have my business. And I really only have Sarah and the team to thank for that, and also their patience. Man, they were patient with me. So, long story short, it kicked my ass, and it was far harder than I could have ever expected. And all of my friends who were helping me with the practicals were like, oh my God, how much work is involved in this?
Yeah, we do find that most people are kind of surprised, not just at the study, because the study is a study, and you've been to university, so you're aware of
exactly what the study is.
Me, not so much. So every time I approach something like that, like, oh, wow, you guys really need me to know a lot of stuff here. But the other surprise is just with what is contained within the role of being a celebrant. Was there something strange for you in regards to the role of a celebrant? Like, the common one is, oh my gosh, you can marry your uncle. Any other weird ones for you?
I was actually surprised. I thought it would be far more, I thought being a celebrant would be far more rigid in terms of like the legal requirements. This is exactly how it needs to be done, and you'll be following the rule book. I was actually surprised about the autonomy that you do have around shaping a ceremony. Of course, we have those legal requirements that we must meet, but they're only really quite small in comparison to what I expected. So that did excite me a lot, because it meant that every single couple that comes along, we can, to a certain extent, tailor their experience based on what they want. And I wasn't expecting that. I thought it would be like, here it is, and this is what we have to do precisely.
I like that. Becoming a celebrant, you said it took almost exactly 3 months. You missed out on a few days there with the three-month limit. How does it feel that second that you get that notice that you are a celebrant?
Oh, man, honestly, it was like It was such a relief because it was such hard work in the last few months doing the practicals. And I'd only just moved up to Queensland and it was sort of the tail end of mid-COVID. So getting numbers for celebrants, number one, when you're an adult trying to find friends in a new place where you know no one is very hard. I'm sure you would understand that. And then also to then make new friends, but also pull them into having to do practical assessments. Everyone hates role play, let's be fair. There's only a few people I know that don't hate role play. And so trying to, if you've got family and close friends that you've known for years, it's like, you don't have a choice. Come on Sunday and we'll do this. But when you're trying to convince people that you haven't been friends with for long to help you out, it can be hard. So that's what I really did find hard in the lead up. And so actually getting that certificate finally for me was just also a bit of a pat on the back to myself for the hard work that I'd put in to make it happen. For me, it was, you don't have a choice. These circumstances are not ideal and you would have been able to do it a lot easier if you had still been living where you were before, but figure it out, post on Facebook, on your community page and get the people to come, feed them and they will provide the goods. So yeah, for me, it was such a relief and I was just ready to go. I was like, okay, how do I do this now? So it was super exciting.
What's your go-to-market plan? You obviously thought about it through doing your study and waiting for the application to be approved. But what's your thing that you're bringing to the market that makes you different and unique from other people? And then how does it roll out over the next 1, 5, 10,000 years?
That's a really good question, Josh. And I think particularly in this day and age of social media, it's very hard not to get all caught up, especially when you're coming out the gates hot, you're excited, you're enthusiastic, you're ready to roll. It's really hard to look at what everyone else is doing and not be worried about, oh, I don't know if I can do this, or being caught up in worrying about how to make reels or how to make your social media perfect, or mine doesn't look like this, or that's not what I do, or website's not up to scratch. Obviously for a lot of students who complete, money's going to be an issue. And when we talk about getting new technology, like our PAs, iPads, laptops, making sure you have a website or somewhere where people can contact you, Instagram, possibly getting some headshots for the beginning of your journey when you don't have any photos. You've got to start to prioritize exactly where you want to focus your energy to make sure that you pick up the right clients that you want. Straight off the cuff, I was very clear that I'm not interested in budget brides. I'm not interested in couples who want to heckle me for a pricing. I know my value and I'm very clear in that. And I know the service and the personal experience that I bring to my couples. And no one else can ever replicate exactly what I do. And so from the very beginning, I was getting a bit overwhelmed by social media, thinking, shit, like this is, I'm not up to scratch. I'm not doing what everyone else is doing. But I really had to sit back and think, all right, what is the value that I can give to my couples? The value that I can give to my couples is that I am a very personable person. I really feel like I do give a shit about their day, about their family, about exactly what they want. And for me, it's about also advocating for them to get what they want as well. It's a lot of money that people spend on their weddings and it's a huge time in their life. And the greatest gift that any of us celebrants can give is our own personal touch. And as I said, for me, it's being able to provide a personable experience like nothing, no one else can. And also to ensure that I create a ceremony that is exactly what the couple want. And one of the main components of that for me is that I want, getting to know my couples is really important to me. I'm not interested in doing the cookie cutter style ceremonies. I want people to sit down at the ceremony and be part of a ceremony and think to themselves, oh, this girl must be the couple must know this celebrant lady, not sit there and think, oh, this is awkward. Like, she has not got their names correct, or this is really clunky. I want people to leave my ceremonies and think like, oh, whoa, that was vibrant. It feels like she's one of their friends and one of us. And then I just slip out into the night, wave them goodbye on my way out. So that was a really long way to answer the question, Josh, but I think it's really important for us to all sit down and figure out who we are as people and how we can provide a service that can never be replicated and no one can ever replace us as individuals.
Yeah, 100%. That's obviously the biggest differentiator between celebrants is we are selling ourselves. It's funny, I talk to a lot of celebrants in Europe through mentoring and coaching sessions over there, and they get really big on their all the trinkets and the stuff, and they're like, hey, there's enough people offering trinkets and stuff, but you are, it's like a 1 in 3 trillion chance you exist. That between your parents meeting and falling in love, and then as I decide to have a child, and then once they decide to have a child, that all that stuff works out. If you don't know that, know what that means, kids, get on Google. And then for the fact that you're born and then you survived birth and you got through those first few years, like, that's a 1 in 3 trillion chance. Like, you are a unique individual. You're like no other. Even like, if you or someone else sat at my feet and you kind of don't sit, like, that's a metaphor. No one actually has to sit at my feet.
but
if you
kind
of attended all my weddings with me and, you know, and we sat in the office for 40 hours a week and just kind of me sharing all of me, you still aren't going to be me. You might be heavily Josh influenced, and someone might see you at a wedding and go, oh yeah, they've studied under Josh, but you're still going to be you. And so that's not only your biggest strength, but it's literally all you're selling. And that's kind of beautiful to be liberated from that point, that you don't have to have, I don't know, the cool things that cool people have. Just you being you is great. And yes, there's accessories. Get a good PA system, you know, maybe have a car that is a kind of respectable to turn up in. Yeah, maybe get a haircut, I don't know, things like that. But at the core, you're just you, and so I'm glad you recognize that.
Yeah, thank you.
How are you going now? What's your current status? Anything I can help or talk to?
My current status is that I so of course, like, that's the other thing with when I was registered, I was like, okay, ready to go. Like, when's my first wedding, and when are all the weddings going to come in? Obviously, when people book celebrants, it's usually a 12 to 18 month lead time. Well, as a general rule at the moment. And so for me, it was like, I was like ready to go, locked and loaded. And it was like, oh, okay. But it actually gave me a really good amount of time to refine my processes and to create templates. And of course, again, because I work full time, it's important for me that I do have a good structure and good business processes, because I simply don't have time unless I'm staying up until midnight or 1 o'clock every night. But yeah, so that was a really good timing for me to sort of get my head down and figure out the processes and how that might look for me. And then, so now I've done 4 weddings. I just had 2 last weekend. I've been doing quite a few. I am originally from New South Wales, lived in Canberra for the last 10 years, and then have been in Queensland now for 2. So I've done most of my weddings actually down south, flying down and marrying friends or siblings of friends or people that I know. So I had 2 last weekend down in Canberra, which now I've done 4. But then for the rest of the year, I've got 12 weddings locked and loaded up until the end of this year. So the latter end of the year will be pretty crazy, and there's a fair bit of travel involved for me. But I'm still starting to get my head around how this all works, how I'm operating as a human as well with full-time work. But yeah, any wisdom you can impart on me, Josh, I will happily take.
Don't be terrible, be awesome, and be yourself. There you go.
Thank you. I'll be writing that down and putting it on a post-it note in my office.
I was thinking more of some kind of inspirational poster. Maybe like you can frame it, it'll be great.
Josh Withers, 2023. Yeah. But yeah, that's sort of where I'm at. So that's I'm still sort of understanding, still trying to figure out, as you would probably know, coming from the Gold Coast, the Southeast Queensland market is desperately oversaturated. And also that means that the pricing is pretty low in comparison to other parts of the country. But as I said, I'm not willing to bargain on my pricing. I know the value that I bring to my couples. So I'm standing pretty staunch with that. And yeah, the celebrant community here is incredible as well. I feel really lucky.
I will say that in an oversaturated market like that, there's still opportunities, particularly when, and I can say this because you're not doing it, so I apologize to anyone that hears this and is doing it, because you might be offended. But looking at a market like that and going, well, I'll just go cheaper, is the laziest method of trying to conquer that market. There's room for low cost things. Like Jetstar is a thing. Solly's or Crazy Clark's or whatever $2 store. Like they are things. There's a market for that. But if you notice those operations, particularly if you look at Jetstar, it's a highly systemized. Like there is a big corporate structure behind being that cheap. There's a whole system there. And so people take the lazy route and actually, it's more work, it's harder, it's worse for them, it's yuck. So the easier route in the long run, which is the harder route in that first step, is to actually say, I'm actually going to be a highly valued member of this society that provides high value. And high value doesn't just mean dollars, it means all the other things it's going to provide, but it also means dollars. And because everyone else is entering the market and going, well, I guess I'll just go cheaper. So everyone's going cheaper, and the market, not everyone in the market wants cheap. I like to fly Qantas, that's not some kind of status symbol. It's just like I'm aware of the value I get for the particular purchase, and particularly for traveling with a family, and I've got status and you get bags and blah 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 blah. There's a reason for not choosing the cheap option there. And so if you are providing value, and if you can communicate that value well, then there's room at the other end of the market, as opposed to everyone racing to the bottom of the market. Because in the end, you just, like, if you win that race, guess what? You're earning the least amount of money. Congratulations.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And I think the same goes with you. Obviously, a Qantas flight for you is more expensive to fly your family than a Jetstar flight. But the thing that really rings true for me is that you as a customer see the value in what Qantas can give you. And it's the same for a celebrant, right? I only want to work with clients or couples who see the value in me and what they will get out of me. Because then, as you said, the process will be far less clunky. And frankly, less hard work for me on the other end.
Yeah, no, it's much better to be operating the higher value end of the market. It's just better for your soul, better for your joy, better for everything, better for everyone, because your couples are getting better product because you don't have to do 400 weddings a year. The match is just better. And all it takes is that one simple decision to say, hey, I'm going to do better. I'm going to charge more, and et cetera. And everything just kind of ricochets from there. So good work. All right.
Thank you.
Look, I just want to congratulate you on becoming a celebrant. It's the best job in the world. And I'm so eager and excited to see people join the profession. And particularly the fact that you've entered it with a goal to be better and to be high value, because I'm known, renowned for saying that there's enough average celebrants, or below average celebrants as well. Well, we need a more excellent, awesome, passionate celebrants. And so thank you for bringing that to the job.
Thank you so much, Josh. I really appreciate it.